This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Growth in the world's second largest economy could have been worse, if you believe the official number. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. There's news that growth in China fell below a 7% annual rate for the first time since the last global financial crisis. Still, 6.9% is close to the government's official goal of 7% and is better than forecasts. Is this good or bad for this key engine of the world economy? Christopher Balding is professor of economics at Peking University. We reached him in Shenzhen. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, David.
Market participants around the world are hanging on this data. It looks like it could have been worse.
The general consensus is that all's well that ends well for the moment. The points of concern that people have are that China seems to be reverting a little bit to its old economic model. New loan growth was up more than 30%, and so Beijing is resorting to the tried and true methods of expanding credit to make sure that highways are getting built and buildings are getting built and people are remaining employed.
But at some level, do you trust this assessment of the economy from the Chinese government statisticians?
I think there is a lot of very valid skepticism of these numbers. Numerous economic firms are actually projecting growth probably in about the 3-4% range. Even people that are generally quite accepting of the Chinese economic data are a little bit skeptical over the growth in the service sector. So I think there's a lot of skepticism. And what's surprising is the number of people who frequently believe and are very strong proponents of these numbers are even puzzled by some of the numbers they're seeing out of Beijing.
Peking University's Christopher Balding teaches economics there. We reached him in Shenzhen. Professor, thank you.
Thank you for having me, David.
Halliburton, the big oil field services company, comes out with its profits and losses this morning. How bad, given low oil prices? Well, profits are expected to fall by 3/4 compared to last year. It seems things couldn't get any worse for that industry, except they very well might, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Halliburton's fortunes rise and fall with fracking. First, you drill a hole, and then a service company like Halliburton takes over. It shoots water and sand and chemicals down to get the energy out. Except when prices fall and the fracking stops, says Tom Fowler of the energy information firm Argus Media.
A lot of the workers out there are guys that work for Halliburton, Schlumberger, and so forth. So when things started to turn south, the big job cuts were felt there most directly first, and they've been felt deeply.
Low oil prices have idled 1,400 drill rigs, forcing Halliburton and its peers to cut up to 25% of its workers, says Joseph Tripke of OilPro.com. He says the problem is there's still more oil than demand, and things won't improve until those balance.
I think we're in this period now of waiting for it to get worse before it can get better. And it could be 12 months, it could be 2 years.
Even then, a leaner Halliburton will likely stay lean. In this downturn, it's innovated and learned to survive at lower prices. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And on this theme, Saudi Arabia is reportedly now paying its bills a bit late and drawing down some of its overseas investments to raise cash. Bloomberg News says it's because the price of oil is where it is, down 1.1% at the moment to $46.72 a barrel. 16 months ago, it was above $110. An airline wanted to charge my boss $40 for airborne internet last week. She declined the offer. And other add-on charges can tug at the wallet. Pillows, bottled water, one airline says, if your carry-on doesn't fit into what looks like an umbrella stand, it'll cost you. This is in part to make way for lower base fares. But is the add-on pricing system actually good for the airlines? Audrey Quinn reports.
Harry Paul and Alex Thompson are heading to visit family in Haiti. The couple showed up at LaGuardia Airport with three bags between them, and here's what they found when they got to the Spirit Airlines ticket counter.
It's $160 for the three bags that we checked in.
$160?
Yep.
When you bought the ticket?
I didn't see it anywhere. It's the worst.
This kind of add-on pricing may actually be just as bad for airlines as it is for travelers. That's according to a new study by Shenjun Gan. He's a University of Texas Dallas economist. He modeled how add-on pricing works for airline companies. He called them firms.
The firm is losing money on the base product.
They're losing money on the discount flight.
And is earning money on the add-on.
But here's the problem with relying on that add-on income. The people who are most attracted to the discount base fare are the people flying on their own money, vacation travelers like the couple headed to Haiti. They're also the ones most sensitive to high add-on prices. So airlines can lure them in with bargain tickets, but they're going to have trouble earning much from them in add-ons.
Because if you charge a high price, those vacation travelers will go to another airline.
And these days, it's super easy to compare ticket prices online. If an airline was to go back to all-inclusive pricing, their higher ticket price would probably scare customers away. It's a lose-lose situation.
Oh, I think that companies like Expedia themselves will eventually get smarter about how they present those things.
That's Nikki Baird. She's a partner with the analyst group Retail Systems Research. She says that's the solution. If travel sites start showing the full price of the ticket plus the add-ons, customers can choose the better all-around airline deal.
If we get to that situation on a more regular basis, then the advantage of sort of nickel and diming consumers at every turn will go away.
Which could help make all-inclusive pricing popular again for both travelers and airlines. And in the meantime, Harry Paul and Alex Thompson say they've learned their lesson about choosing low-cost airlines with high add-on prices.
Yeah, it's not really cost-effective.
Yeah, never again.
This couple says next time they'll check for baggage fees before they get to the airport. In New York, I'm Audrey Quinn for Marketplace.
And there's word Amazon is suing about 1,000 people for taking money to write fake reviews of products online. Fiverr is one company that had been paying people $5 per bogus review. But these lawsuits target the individuals who do the creative writing, not the sites. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.